off the ball.
Rugby.
Yeah, it was very, very tough, but the first objective was to rebuild my body. I wanted to take the needed time to come back in the best way as I can.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Good morning, everybody. Cullum, how are you?
How are you, Arthur?
Arthur, how are you?
Great.
You were in Cork, Cullum?
It was, yeah. Do you know I went to Temple Hill? Cork Con against Young Munster. Got the last 20 minutes, went into it. Who was there, of course? Peter O'Mahony, Donica, Frankie. Great atmosphere. Young Munster fans peppered throughout.
You're close to that, are you?
Yeah, down the road, yeah. Used to go there a lot as a child. But great to get back to grassroots rugby. Your desk is slightly moved, so you're closer to me now.
Absolutely, yeah.
And they won.
And they won. Shane McCarthy scored for Young Munster.
Right.
Nice try, actually. And Conn won it at the death. It's very good.
What's the standard like?
Strong.
Yeah.
Strong.
Like,
there'll be more...
I don't mean that, sorry. I don't mean that in a disparaging sense. I mean just on the eye compared to, like, if you're at a Leinster
rugby. Yeah, like on the eye. The eye would be a good question to ask me, because you'd ask a more knowledgeable eye about like what the actual difference is. But no, it was like, it was good quality stuff, basically. But very enjoyable, you know, because it was last minute decision to go down. And that part where that's what Bill Bowie was talking about before Christmas, like where he grew up around there. So you have that place, Parky Ring, Parky Queef, all in the same area.
A holy trinity.
It's unbelievable. The sport in that particular part of Cork.
Basilicas of sport.
That's
very good. It's very enjoyable.
The cost for running those teams in the top divisions of the AIL is between $300,000 and $1 million, depending on which part of the country you're in. The Dublin teams apparently spending up to $1 million on their squad a year, which is quite a lot of money. So the standard is decent. Like, they've got very well qualified coaches.
How are they getting the money back for that? Or is it
sugar daddies?
Okay, it's just okay. Yeah,
yeah. Now, sorry,
follies.
some of them, and obviously some of them are community clubs who are fundraising the whole thing.
Yeah, okay. So, like,
and that would be certainly, there would be a very Leinster rest of Leinster divide on that, which I think is, we should do a piece on it actually.
Yeah.
Because the finances of keeping that league on are, you know, it's definitely at the generosity of strangers, kindness of strangers, to get my quotes right here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true, because we did a piece on it last year. A book was written about this, because it is interesting. At the rise of rugby in the last 25 years on a national level, at the interest in the national side and the provinces, it's what kind of actually different to the AIL, which is kind of going the other way. So it does require these people to keep it going, these individuals with a passion and all that.
You were at a radio conference, though.
Yeah, I was down there at UCC for that one, on Friday.
Any good?
The Owl of Maxima. Got Haunt. It was very good. Well attended.
Were you totes emotional/nostalgic/glad you got out, or a mix of all of these cocktail of feelings?
Glad I got out of where? The conference?
No, UCC. They're like...
Oh, no, like that's the very warm nostalgia clause, isn't it? Walking around. Because it's in term as well. Like, so there were students milling about. You know what's mad? I've gone since late 2011. It hasn't changed that much, but I don't mean that in a negative way either. They've just topped it up here and there.
Yeah.
They're dartboards now in what was the new bar, which is now just the bar. And when I went in there, there was a load of students darting away.
Getting drunk in the afternoon?
Just darting.
No drinking?
I think drinking among the youth is, I think it's a 0-0 culture, you know?
Yeah, it's you know, reports of...
Someone's drinking.
Alcohol's demise have been greatly exaggerated.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure.
The numbers are clearly down, but I'm sure there are people making up for it.
Well, 0-0 is, you know, front and centre and taps now proudly as drafts. Back in my day, it would be hidden away in the fridge in a bottle that's gathering dust with non-alcoholic beer there.
Well, it is one of the, you know, it's great that they're able to charge the same price for something.
Yeah, because that's it. Nothing's changed there.
What are you paying for?
Yeah. Yeah. But it was lovely. It was a kind of accidental or possibly purposeful all Cork panel but one on it.
Yeah.
So that was cool too.
It was a good show.
Jackie Hurley, yeah. Tony Donoghue.
Jackie Hurley, Tony Donoghue, Trevor
Welsh.
And then we had Michael D. McAndrew from Midwest Radio in Mayo, who was actually running back up the road afterwards to cover the Dublin game.
Right.
Yeah.
I was in Paris this weekend, brought the kids to Disneyland on Friday.
Yeah.
All right.
A hard recommend. For Disney, I had never done it before. I had no idea what to expect.
The first thing I was asking this morning was your childlike wonder rejuvenated?
I do love roller coasters. They are amazing. Oh. They are unbelievable. The you just get into it and you're like, oh, this is actually class. I'm not terrified of this the way I thought I would be. Because there's certain periods of your life where, like, and so we did all the tourist stuff, like whistle stop Paris, so you never have to do it again if you ever go back. Anthony Bourdain has a thing, don't do any of the tourist stuff in Paris, like Paris is sitting in cafes watching. Anthony Bourdain does not have three post-internet attention span children to worry about and try and herd around the city.
I had a good philosophy in life.
He did, yeah.
All ended well.
Yeah.
I'm rewatching that at the
until
moment.
It didn't.
Parts Unknown.
Do you know what I'm reading?
What?
Marco Pierre White's memoir.
Oh yeah, I've heard great things about that.
So good.
Is it?
It is good.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Slow thing. I'm not. I love the Kitchen Confidential ones.
Did you read that?
Yeah.
See, I only got them on the Parts Unknown side of it. Yeah, just every so often I go back to that.
The book is class. There's Patrick Redden Keefe. I've actually picked up Patrick Redden Keefe did the intro to Bourdain's collected writings after he died. And he's like, look, this guy obviously told everybody it was like incredibly fortunate, but he had literary aspirations his entire life.
Yeah. Now, did you get to do all of this at the Olympics? Did you get to go around and see things?
No.
You were heavy working.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you sent me a picture outside Tour Eiffel.
Yeah, went up Tour. I'd never done that before.
It's
couldn't get all the way up to the top.
It's a bit narrow, isn't it?
But
we went to the top, yeah.
No, the top was closed.
There's a bar at the top.
Is there at the top as well? There's one on the first floor and then the second floor is just shops. So that was good. A little bit of, went up the Arc de Triomphe. Have you ever done that?
Up it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
I was in Paris about 25 years ago and that was the only time. It is.
It's sitting outside a cafe is a great shout.
Flew into Charles de Gaulle, flew out of Orly Airport. Orly Airport, that's your Vueling? Have you ever heard of them? I had never used them before.
I never used, no.
Oh no, sorry, Transavia. I'd used Vueling before. Transavia, never heard of them.
Yeah.
KLM's cheap ones, they were brilliant. You can get the metro from Orly in and out 20 minutes from Gare de Lyon. There you go. This is the travel show you didn't know. As a result of this, I have no idea what happened over the weekend.
That's fair. Yeah.
So it's up to you to carry the show.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. I meant to say that to you. I was traveling a good bit.
No.
We should start with the expected teams. The Ireland rugby team is going to be announced in 22 minutes.
Yeah, this is fantastic for us. A real treat for Off the Ball Breakfast there. But the rumour team is very. I guess it's exciting, isn't it? If you're somehow an Ireland fan and neutral among provinces, it's very exciting.
A clip has gone viral of Andrew Trimble, which I want to put to Dara. Where's Dara? Get him in here. He's like, wouldn't it be great if we brought three or four young fellas through and then we finished fourth? All that tells you is that those young fellas are shite, was essentially what he was saying. I was like, this is exactly it. Yeah, do you want to be good? Do you want to win? Anyway, Andrew Osborne's going to start a fullback. Sorry, Jamie Osborne's going to start a fullback. Andrew Osborne hasn't made it just yet. Stockdale on the left wing in place of Lowe. Keane Prendergast at six.
Keane Prendergast making his Six Nations debut.
With James Ryan out. And sorry, the Prendergast boys. So Sammy and Keeney are playing together. Big day for the Prendergast family.
They're both just Prendo, aren't they, surely?
Prendy.
God.
Well, that's what Mike Prendergast is Prendy, as far as I know.
Yeah.
I don't know what the...
I must ask.
Wouldn't the right thing to do is ask somebody how to pronounce the name, wouldn't it? Jeremy Lickman / Michael Milne. Sorry.
They'll need a sick one in the heat of the battle on Thursday because you can't be calling out Prendo and having the two boys look back at you. Carnage.
Oh, man. So that's, are you excited about this proposed team? You're happy? That'll get the win.
Do you know what? I'm really taken aback by Stockdale over Lowe.
13-point underdog.
I think it's a good shout, you know? Lowe hadn't been playing well. 6-2 reported on the bench. So the two backs would be the Munster boys. So no James Lowe at all.
So
now we'll confirm this in about 20 minutes. This is this morning's newspapers we're reading from.
The new Kieran Frawley, is that what you're telling me?
Jack, is it?
Yeah. Not a great situation when you're, I'm a utility back, I can cover many positions. I just want to get in the matchday squad.
All going well, if they don't need him to do that, he'll be coming on at 10.
Not being facetious and not think, but if that's as it is, does that settle the 10 then, do you think, for the time being? It's kind of like, even in this, because I'm sure he's aware of the fact that like they're a little bit vulnerable all in. It's like, we need, you know, you don't want to get hammered. I'm not trying to spark it. We're not going to clip it. There's going to be no clips of it. I'm just curious if that does settle. You're like, okay, chips are down. It's like really tough scenario. He's the guy I'm going.
So you mean like England again in 2 weeks, he'll be back in? Because, you know, there's Italy in between. So Italy, you could play Harry Burner, you could play Jack Rowley.
You probably, but it does seem, if that's it, is that not like, maybe, or are you saying like in 12 months time?
So we've got Italy next, right?
Yeah.
He's picking his full team, fully loaded, absolutely first. There's no messing around this year for Italy. Because
no, probably not.
We lose 15 points. If the game goes the way everybody expects it to go, we're going to be beaten by 13 points.
There's one less break this year as well, isn't there? So it's a more condensed. Yeah. It's a more condensed tournament. And
I just think that he will pick a team to win a game, to get points on the board, to, you know, get the big mo going for the tournament. So I think it is settled in their heads. You just wonder, is there the fallacy of sunk cost here, where it's like, well, we've invested in this guy, we decided he was our guy, he hasn't quite progressed the way we wanted him to. Anytime you want to pull out one of those great performances and learn how to tackle, we'd be much obliged.
All right. Well, I'll be interested.
But it's settled. It is settled.
Yeah, okay.
Until it's not.
Yeah, no, that's what I know.
You know,
silly question.
He plays badly here, and it's like he has... like, Frawley's in the doghouse for a drop in the November of 2024. He's been in the doghouse the entire time since. He was sent back to play with the, like, it's not even the seconds really. Is what is it? Ireland A, Ireland Wolfhounds. What crap brand are they using at the moment?
Is it 15s? Isn't it
the 15s? It's like, oh, the 15s. Yeah, well, could they have made it 13? they were all sent home on a Ryanair flight 2 days early. It's like, oh great, I was going to be the saviour at 10 and now I'm being sent to Connacht.
Yeah,
I'm getting a Ryanair flight home 2 days before everybody else flies to Paris. Like, great. Oh, that really worked out for me, didn't it?
Yeah. I actually came in this morning because I didn't anticipate the team being out during the show. I came prepared to talk about Munster on Friday night. It's like, this is like, you know what, there was a point the 18th of October when this is an incredible new era under Clayton McMillan. I'm thinking, where's all this going? So they lose Glasgow. A lot of players missing for Glasgow out of the Six Nations. Now, Munster still scored 4 tries, but they were largely brutal. Tony Butler got hooked.
The game was in Cork, was it?
No. It was in Scotland.
Oh, all right, okay. Sorry.
They had beaten Dragons.
You're at it. I was like,
very. No, I watched them while in Cork, so there was a lot of more anger. Tom Wood came on, Keith's young fella.
Great.
At out half. And he had some really good moments. He kind of matched the vibe of the place, which was a lot of mistakes at times. Intercepted tries as well. As I say, Munster still scored 4 tries, but they missed the first 3 conversions. Some guys won by 9 points in the end. It was a bit worrying, the end of the game. A bit of a feel of like, what the hell is happening here at Munster? It was a good day on Saturday for the other 3 provinces. They all won. So thought I'd be talking about that, but fast forward into the projected team here. And as predicted, like, you know, very little Munster representation. And it's hard to argue at the moment, you know?
I'm surprised it's taken 14 minutes for you not to bang on about how great Man United are.
Well, there's so many places we can go.
Carrick is the new messiah.
I also have a competition to do.
3 from 3.
Yeah, 3 from 3, which he's got there now quicker than Ruben Amorim did quite comfortably to win 3 games in a row.
Your man's back centre stage with the hair. He's shuffling back into...
Yeah, 2 games
Sesko.
Away.
Consciousness.
Not the boy online.
Oh, sorry. I thought Sesko. Sesko had a haircut.
With the hair.
Sesko had a haircut.
He then got the buzz cut.
It's great. It's time you can haircut. You set your watch to.
Yeah, it was a good finish. Now, having said that, if he had missed the chance, I don't think people would be complimenting his first touch. His first touch is a bit away from him. He had a lot of work to do. But he curled it around the defender nicely. A Fulham, like, you know, no mugs. Second most informed team beyond Arsenal going into... the weekend, the last 8 games.
From the outset, all the circumstances around it, I just knew from that one, a win would be underplayed and anything else would be overblown based on where those 2 teams are. It's a very good result for Man United. Very, very good result. I just think it's like, it's one of those that'll be, it's like, oh, it's Fulham at home. It's like, no, it's not just Fulham at home. Like, the gap was only about 6 points beforehand. I think, or maybe even less, because it's out now, I think it's 7 or 8. But anyway, Yeah. Good result.
Yeah, Fulham were in form. Yeah.
Trucking on.
Shevchenko, not a bust.
Well, it's 94-minute winner in a game that went to about 101 minutes. So, which was mad. Anyway.
You know, like,
about it. It's all good.
It is. It is all good. Because, you know, look, if it had ended a draw, right, if Kevin's shot in the top corner was the last goal in the game, you could say, so here we go now, you know. They're up for the big games, not so much the smaller games. That would have been the narrative. But then Shevchenko gets the winner. And now it's reminiscent of the really successful era there a few years ago, where United were festooned with late winners all throughout the years of Alex Ferguson.
Ferguson era,
without playing well, like, you know.
A couple of years
so ago, it does happen. Yeah.
Lavishly gifted squad suddenly finding its potential under a thrusting young buck of a manager. And it looks like Pep Guardiola's time is coming to an end. The reporting is now coming from everywhere that the lineup of potential replacements has been shortlisted, and the Athletic are saying it's expected as opposed to thought.
Yeah.
So Xabi Alonso's on the list. Maresca and Seth Fabregas.
Yeah.
Poo-pooed Fabregas when I suggested him for Man United.
For Man United, but I'd also poo-poo Maresca. It makes more sense for City. But he wouldn't be the man for Man United. I think they're very different jobs, no?
I suppose the pressure is higher.
I don't even mean that. I just mean you're probably moving into a far more coherent space at City. Like, as bad as things are, their base is still fairly high. It'll be a test, it'll be a big step up, but I think you'd be a lot more at ease. I think you'd probably be able to focus the business at hand more at Man City.
I don't think there's anyone that would come into the job you would say, oh yeah, that's a good, that's perfect now. It's such a difficult
there's
one to
no
follow, isn't it?
There's no the caliber the guy
is left. Literally no one, yeah. But I wonder, is he checked out, like, are we just placing that into the narrative that Pep's checked out? Because it was a weird game at the weekend, really weird. They destroyed Spurs in the first half.
I don't think he's checked out.
They themselves in the second half.
I just think he's having difficulty communicating his ideas, and I'm not sure his ideas are having, everybody has looked at them and studied them, and like the hive mind of world football has attacked it and they've found ways to breach it. And the quality of the players are up against is better now than it was when he started.
I just think Haaland stopped scoring.
Haaland hasn't scored. He's scored 1-7, and that's a penalty.
It's kind of that's your, and he's rarely, he's not contributing an awful lot.
Ever since I put him in that all-time Premier League 11, it's gone downhill.
So it's kind of like, I think that's, and that's what everyone kind of beforehand was kind of suggesting.
Yeah, he still has that passion, right? Because you know when Ryan Cherki had that class run, did you see that? When he was turning fellas inside out, like, you know, it's going to throw back when players are taking on lads. And he had an option of squaring in the middle, but he went top corner. It was actually a brilliant save by Vicario, but they didn't give a corner. Anyway, he went nuts at that. Guardiola, and that's kind of the football that a lot of the world has been quite crying out for at the moment. Because you see Keith Tracy there went viral with his team from the early noughties versus team from now. It made the Libero podcast. Miguel Delaney was talking about it, so maybe this really is harping onto something, you know. Anyway, Pep wasn't having it,
and Rodri is in trouble. He says referees have to be neutral. I know we won too much and the people don't want us to win, but the referee has to be neutral. And for me, honestly, it's not fair. It's not fair because we work so hard in these situations. And now to make these decisions, we have to turn to page 48.
What was he giving out about?
I don't know.
We have to move on. Of course, you need to come back. But in the end, when everything is finished, we are frustrated because it's so clear. The foul, Solanke, kicked the leg. And of course, with the push of the action on the ball goes in.
I don't know how that wasn't ruled out. He just kicked through the back.
The first goal?
Yeah. Mm. He just kicked through the back. And maybe I'm missing something.
Yeah, I think you're right there.
He just kicked through his leg. Yeah. I think he was on that one. I was surprised it wasn't called back.
He's saying that that there's a conspiracy, though.
I don't,
he has to be banned for life.
I don't think that's true. But
I see there's a witch hunt out to get Bundyaki now. Ban the man for life. Never let him play again.
I was surprised.
The decision. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Solanke's equaliser, you know, that distracted everyone else. Scorpion. Beautiful Scorpion kick. But you know, that was such a weird first half. See Semenyo's goal. He did a celebration, the Obafemi Martins one, and he fell over. And then the Spurs fans went, way. Second after conceding the goal. There was no atmosphere to the place at all. So I don't know what happened at halftime. Does the halftime team talk me into something in Thomas Frank? Or were they trying to restore some professional pride, the Spurs players, because it was embarrassing? But I don't know what happened in that second half, unless City's performance went that far down, which then interests me in what did Pep Guardiola say at halftime.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, do you know what's funny? You know, after McIlroy won the Masters,
yes,
and we had John Perry on from UL, the sports psychologist, and I remember talking to him beforehand, and he was saying like that the halftime, the idea of the halftime thing is kind of nonsense in terms of maybe creating something that's not there. Maybe you tap into something that's already been worked on or whatever, you remind on different bits and pieces, but you can't. He was like, his contention, I don't know if it's right or wrong, but his contention from his experience was that that doesn't, that's way, way overblown. It's like what was said at halftime. Now, so many former players and stuff to say it, I don't know if that's kind of just habit or whatever it is, but what I would say is that the same thing, I remember watching the Villa game in the Cup, Villa Spurs, and Villa, it was more or less the same pattern of that first game, first half of that City game, where it was like, this could be five or six. And then out of nowhere in the second half, Spurs come out and they make a game of it. And nearly, I forget the exact way that game went, but they nearly kind of, it was definitely still in the mix at the end. So it seems more of a trend than a kind of outlier. Even the kind of, the United Spurs game I was at, Spurs were woeful in that first half. Mm-hmm. Come out again, second half, 2-1 up, and then end up throwing it away, whatever.
I don't know. You'd imagine the players are having words with each other, aren't they?
Perhaps. But perhaps, like the other team, just there's just a bit of complacency emerges in the other team because they cannot believe how straightforward this is. Like when that goal went in, that first City goal, it was like the games during COVID. There was no noise. It was bizarre. And I think Neville was referring to it as being like almost eerie.
Yeah, he was like really soccer aid reference to it. Yeah, as I'm saying, I've never seen that position set of fans boo or laugh at a player who has a botched celebration, conceding a goal. Like, you know, that doesn't really happen. Now, it goes to say the level of the Premier League is that like one team drops your level a little bit and the other rises it. That very quickly they look equatable, these two teams, because you would say all day long City are far superior to Spurs.
Yeah,
but it's only a little bit of percentage either way, and they're back.
Absolutely. And I do think as well that the tactical ability of managers to spot things, and their, you know, millions of analysts, actually this thing is happening here, if we just do this tiny bit more we might get some joy, and suddenly you get a bit of joy and there's a bit of doubt because the teams are all relative. Arsenal won the league at the weekend, is that what we were saying?
A marvellous weekend for the lads, you know? Unbelievable. Like this time last week, we were talking about the battling nature of it. Can a team even battle it at all? And they go up to Leeds. It should be a banana skin game. That has no right being at 3 p.m. on a Saturday. That is a box office game on paper, Ellen Road, Leeds, Arsenal. And Arsenal treated it with that disdain that it was at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. They just destroyed the opposition. Like, get rid of these lads. Swatted them away.
Yeah.
No bother to them at all. Shall we play a game?
Go for it.
Called Who Gets It All? Who Gets It All? This is your chance to win €100 Braeburn voucher. It's usually on a Monday. This is the Monday of the week. I'm going to keep it very, very simple here. It's the first show of spring in February for us, right? First show in February. Keep it light. It is the week of the Six Nations. I want someone to win this and I want the competition entries to roll in. WhatsApp 0879 180 180. That's the only place you can enter this competition. Very, very simply. What year did Ireland last win the Six Nations? 0879 180 180. We will pick one winner from all those
entries. I'm stumped.
And
they kind of blurred, don't they?
Yeah, they do blur.
Maybe not that easy for people.
It is hard to tell. And also, anyway, is it? There are ways. Have to win a Grand Slam for you to actually remember it. Or
So this is just
so blasé.
This is not the everything.
The trophy.
The trophy. Just winning the Six Nations competition.
Yeah, you're the best team in the table.
Best team. So when is the last time? What year did Ireland last do that? Win the Six Nations 5 minutes before we announce the team. So we'll do this throughout the show. 0879 180 180 is the only place we'll accept the answer for this competition. Who gets it all? €100 Braeburn voucher.
The Ireland team is about to drop this morning at 8 o'clock. Darragh Smith-Nochan's going to come in and give us his live reaction to the team. We think it's been so well leaked at this stage that we do know what it's going to be.
Yeah,
there is still room for some wiggle room for surprise. Is it going to be a 6-2 bench?
Yeah, that, I'm interested in the replacements, definitely. Get your thoughts in as well, let us know. One more thing as well, just before we get to that, we have time.
Go.
The fisted point in Gaelic football. It was annoying me. Just want to set this up for later on with Tammy. But it was it was annoying me, and watching back, albeit highlights only from the weekend, but I was just reminded of like this cop-out, and people would be saying, oh, it's a skill, it's a part of the game. And of course, when your club or county benefit from it, brilliant. Great stuff, but I think it's too easy. I think it's too easy to score a point with how skillful these lads are. James Donoghue was saying on the football pad this week, it should be reduced to half a point.
I do wonder why we need to keep changing the rules when the game has now never been better, but that's not to say we can't make it even better still. But messing around with scoring. We'll talk to Tommy about it. Geezer had stuff to say about that. We'll also talk to you a little bit later on about James Scale has been brilliant on the hurling pod this week. Ben O'Connor is saying they're taking a little bit of blood out of the game. Scale, surprisingly thoughtful. Not really that surprising.
No, not surprisingly thoughtful. Surprising opinion on it. He's always very thoughtful to compare to him.
But on that, it was nuanced.
Very nuanced. Oh, yeah.
Managed to ride both horses at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's one last thing I just want to say, right? There's pictures of Peter Mandelson in his pants all over the place, right?
Yeah,
would
God.
You not be a little bit surprised or cautious about, like, your man over there is taking a lot of pictures of us. Do you know what I mean? Jeremy, why do you need all these pictures of me in my underwear? What are you going to do with these? What is the point of them? Oh, you're a totally legit fella. And there's nothing bad. There's nothing dodgy about you whatsoever. And yet you seem to be...
Yeah.
You're prone to taking photographs of me. And so, you know, if that was... Say you just play this out a while and a decade later these photographs came to light. They might reflect... People wouldn't understand the full context of it.
So you're suggesting that's his defence.
Well, no,
he runs with that.
When Mandelson, these idiots, like, what are they doing? It's like, oh yeah.
When Mandelson thinks about it, he was like, well, I was really in the moment at the time, you know, so I wasn't thinking about it.
But Mandelson, the Prince, there, a lot of them like to have their photograph taken in the midst of it. I'm like, what are you doing?
It's a good question.
What are you? Yeah. The lad with the camera, who's like clearly a psychopath and a weirdo, is taking photographs of you. Were you not? Did you not think that maybe?
But clearly, he's a convincing psychopath. Who's like, let's cherish these memories.
Yeah,
yeah, cool.
Anyway,
let's make memories.
Speaking of which, let's make some rugby memories.
We'll never forget this.
Dara has been in Portugal. He's back now. Here he is talking with Dan Sheehan.
Dan, the competition in your position at the minute is pretty loaded in camp and then also outside of camp. There's lads putting their hands up. Is that something that kind of drives you on and motivates you day to day?
For sure. Yeah. You know, I think there's some top quality young hookers across all the provinces now, and you know, you look a few years ago, maybe people saying there was a shortage, and you know, I think all the provinces are producing some top quality hookers, and it's, you know, it just drives everyone on. And you know, myself and a row, obviously being in a few camps now, and Tom, Gus, you know, even Rob Herring have been pushing us the whole way, so yeah, it's all good.
Either side of you in the scrum is a bit unsettled with all the injuries. Does that impact your preparation at all?
No, I think we have confidence in the people we have. You know, we've done a good job of building some good depth over the years, and you know, we've got some loose heads who have caps, and other teams I think would struggle, but I think we have good depth that we, you know, we have good people to come in, and yeah, I don't think a whole lot has changed, or there's been no sense of sort of panic at all in that sort of situation.
Right, Dara, the team is 60 seconds away.
Yeah.
It's not your team.
No. I would like to think I would have guessed pretty close to it.
Well,
based on my experience in Portugal.
I was saying, give Lowe the chance on the left wing.
Give Lowe?
No, sorry. Give your boy chance on the left wing.
Yeah?
Just because I think it's actually going to be better for Lowe in terms of the competition that he feels.
Yeah, well, there's no point in having a player thinking he has the divine right to a jersey. Not that I'm saying he does think that, but he started pretty much every game with the last few years at left wing when he's been available. So no harm in building a bit of competition there. And Stockdale, I suppose, has played their loads for Ireland really over the last 10 years. So he's not a complete stranger.
7, it is up.
It's up.
Yeah. So Jeremy Lukeman, number 1. Dan Sheehan, 2. Thomas Clarkson, 3. Joe McCarthy, 4. Tadhg Byrne, 5. Cian Prendergast, 6 for his debut. Josh van der Fleer, 7. Caelan Doris, 8. Jameson Gibson-Park, 9. Number 10, Sam Prendergast. Number 11, Jacob Stockdale. 12, Stuart McCluskey. 13, Gary Ringrose. 14, Tommy O'Brien. And 15, Jamie Osborne. On the bench, replacements. 6-2 split. Ronan Kelleher, Michael Milne, Finlay Beelam, James Ryan, Jack Conan, Nick Timoney, Craig Casey, Jack Crowley. We had hoped the 6-2 split might make room for Edwin Dogbo.
Yeah.
It has not made room for Edwin Dogbo.
Yeah, that's slightly disappointing.
There's one second row on the bench and James Ryan. Obviously, Tadhg Byrne.
Yeah.
Cian Prendergast is your other... If Tadhg Byrne goes down, James Ryan comes on. And if McCarthy goes down after that, then Cian Prendergast is into the second row and Nick Timoney or Jack Conan comes on.
Yeah.
They're going to replace Van der Fleer and they're going to replace Cian Prendergast with Timoney and Conan at some point in the game. And you better hope that none of our wingers go down, because we ain't got no wing replacement.
No, we don't. Ring Rose has played on the wing before, I suppose.
Yeah, an emergency, yeah.
So, well, we don't really have a 13 replacement, but I suppose Crowley can go 12, McCluskey 13, maybe. I like the look of it, though. It's closer to what we were kind of hoping for in terms of a bit of experimentation. Now, their hand's kind of been forced with certain injuries. That's why Kieran Prendergast is in that squad. Ryan Baird, obviously, was kind of the guy who was holding that jersey during November. He's out injured. Clarkson, obviously, a tight head. They had said Ty Furlong was back training in full and was available, but they obviously have made a decision to rest him for another week because that calf injury is still prevalent.
Tomorrow's going to be a big training day for Tig, was the phrase.
Yeah. He had been doing his own rehab solely away from the group and doing training bits on his own. So they were kind of worried going into that week. And yeah, clearly they thought that he wasn't quite ready. Philly Beelam on the bench as well. So he's not even fit enough to make the bench. Timney on the bench, rewarded for form maybe in the URC. I don't know, he got a bit of time there in November, but good to see him getting some meaningful minutes there. And he's a power player. Like, he's coming off the bench and hopefully combating that kind of trademark French power that we saw last year. Happy for Prendergast as well. I'm not surprised. I was saying to you, Colin, before the
which Prendergast
show, Kieran Prendergast.
Yeah.
I'm not totally surprised he's in that squad, because they've been lacking a little bit of leadership. Particularly, we talk a lot about the refs and how we navigate that kind of side of the game. And Prendergast has been kind of captain for a couple of seasons now, and out of all the captains in the provinces, I would say the best when it comes to communicating with referees. So I think it makes total sense. And he's also a great line-out option as well, because that's the rumour going around that France are loading up their team with line-out options. So they're going to target that part of the game. So makes a lot of sense to me. Tyke Byrne in the second row was interesting. I kind of thought they looked at him as more of a six these days, but
maybe when you've John McCarthy back,
yeah,
at the grunt there.
They think they have enough there, yeah. Slightly disappointed not to see a Dogbo on the bench, but I don't think you're losing anything with James Ryan per se. Prendergast at 10, I don't know what you think. Again, I'm not totally surprised. I thought Harry Byrne might get a look in, but they did say it was an open bid over the last couple of weeks for that jersey, and obviously they've found Prendergast the front runner there, so he gets the nod. Interesting. I suppose Stuart McCluskey there beside him makes it a little easier defensively. See, such a big tackler. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that unfolds. I know you were saying, like, because Crowley's kind of the new Frawley now, and that his versatility is now hurting him a little bit. And that he's clearly, I could envision.
You couldn't have done the 6-2 split with the other way around.
No.
You couldn't have Sam Prendergast as the.
But he's not covering centre, and they do need centre cover there. Which Stuart McCluskey does have a bit of an injury issue. But I could see Prendergast playing the whole game and Crowley coming on at fullback, to be honest. So yeah, I don't know what that says about how they view Crowley right now, because Harry Byrne's not coming on the bench, or isn't starting on the bench in this kind of fashion. He can only cover 10 and 12. But yeah, what do you think?
Well, the panic was props, particularly Lou said, mm-hmm. Now that it's been selected, now we've seen the bench, is the panic eased? Look, I'm going to be bare bones Harry Redknapp material. It's not bad as backups go.
No, it's not. And I actually thought Michael Milne might get the nod there, just because he's played with Dan Sheehan and Clarkson more for Leinster. Obviously, he's at Munster now, but Lukeman is known for scrummaging above all else, so that it does make sense that he's been picked for this game. And you heard in that clip there, Dan Sheehan was saying there's no real drop in quality, we don't think, from these loose heads. We have a lot of depth there, so he's not worried whatsoever about that, the injury crisis there. But you know, I think you're splitting hairs between the two lads there. It's kind of disappointing to see Billy Bone sent back down to the 15s during the week, but I wouldn't be surprised if he got another call up. I think he's going to start that game against England A on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And should he impress, I think he still has a chance to get a cap in the Six Nations. But for now, it's the two Munster boys who are going to take that jersey.
The two wingers, right, we need them to stay fit and disciplined, right? Because the depth there, which is often the case, particularly when you go 6-2, is that you sacrifice depth out wide.
Yeah.
But hopefully Stockton will have a great game, obviously. But if he doesn't have a great game, is it a sense that they're going to have to persist with him here if he's fitting well? Because it's too much of a shuffle, isn't it? Otherwise...
You mean as in for the week after, the week following?
No, sorry, I'm saying if, say, for argument's sake, something's not going well for him on the game on Thursday, and he could do with being replaced, what would you actually do in that instance?
I would push Osborne out to left wing and then put Crowley at the fullback, probably.
In the middle of the game?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so like yeah,
if you need it, you know, if you need to do it, whatever reason.
I think that'd be very harsh. He'd have to be having a terrible game. Yeah,
exactly. And he won't. Yeah. He probably won't.
I think he'll do well.
You do plan for all these eventualities though, right?
Well, I'm just thinking that's the only thing in my mind that was like, okay, what if?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm feeling confident.
Are we? Am I? Yeah. Do you remember Friday night 2 years ago, that game?
Yeah.
The first one.
There's a race performance.
I remember there was trepidation going into that game. Not as pronounced as this year. Mm. So to answer your question, yeah.
I think we vastly underrated the hangover that they felt about blowing their World Cup opportunity.
There was a different vibe to it. Yeah,
the whole city collapsed. And
I saw in the Times this morning, UK Times, that they had about 6, 7, 8 different rugby correspondents. They all had Ireland 3 or 4. But now, obviously, if you're feeling somewhat confident tomorrow, I suppose if you get any sort of result tomorrow.
Oh, if you were to win this game,
you're putting paid to that. Yeah,
outrageous.
The only thing is, Galtier dropping some of the stars. And the new blood coming in, they might be hungry, full of ambition.
Hungry young fighter.
You know, and want to prove themselves.
It's new blood that is already proven.
Blood. We know this blood.
It's very talented blood.
So that's the other side. If you think too much about the opposition, like you could spook yourself into defeat.
Yeah.
So I'd just be confident enough that Ireland could...
They'll hang with them.
How much do they listen to us, I suppose? So if they do... There's extra motivation for the doubters heading into this match. Being like,
do you mean us collectively?
Us collectively as a nation talking about about the state of the team.
Yeah. I had seen a lot of talk on the France rugby Twitter kind of pages, and they are smelling blood in terms of the injury crisis at certain positions, but like I don't know.
It's called an injury crisis heading into it. And you look at the 15, you look at the 23. There's some good people being left out of the squad, like that are fit and ready to play. Yeah. So it's not bad depth at the same time. This is not an incredibly inexperienced side that, oh, we're going to get hammered here. Anything at all, like anything at all would be a good showing if we can do something. It's like, no, there's expectation here on this side. There's a lot of experience in that Ireland scene.
Yeah.
Like I remember, for a very loose interest, I remember watching that thing last year, not to mention the war, but when Wales went there on the opening weekend, you're like, this will be whatever France decide it will be.
Yeah.
It was like, I think, what did they stop it off? Was it 40 something nil at the end or whatever it was?
Yeah.
It's not going to be that.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. You're extremely negative.
43-0 it was last year.
43,
First of Jan.
I don't know. I'm just like, you know, Penno won't be helping himself. You know, to tries, like if the going's good, that will ease my concerns. But obviously, there's a next man up aspect to it. They have plenty of talent.
At a Sogbe is the kind of replacement. He's a baller.
So, like, obviously, they have depth.
England beat them 8-14. Wales.
Yeah.
That was Pollock's score. That was Pollock's debut, actually. Yeah. Scored 2 tries off the bench. Like the French team, there's certain. I don't feel too negative about it, but there are certain positions. I look at, like, the two halfbacks there. Entomac has always been a quality player for France and Toulouse, but Jalibert is probably the best 10 in the world right now.
Yeah.
And it's just so happened that Entomac's gotten injured, so Galtier is almost forced to play him because he doesn't really like him. That's always been the rumour, that they don't get on.
Uh-huh.
But now he's forced to play him, and it's like, oh, Jesus. So you've got the best scrum half in the world, the best out half in the world. And, you know, we talk a lot about our 10s, and they're all quite inexperienced at the minute, so...
When is the French team being named? I'm literally trying to find it here.
This morning at some point, I don't think we have an exact time, but it is this morning. I'm refreshing here.
Do you expect then there'll be a measured reaction one way or another?
No.
Never is.
No, I don't think so.
And would you like a measured reaction?
Well, I'm just wondering, what's like, what does... So I know what... A win against the odds would look like. I know what a blowout defeat would look like. But what, so a 15-11, whatever, like,
Yeah,
sturdy defeat, 15, like admirable me, defeat.
I'd say the narrative, but that was a poor game, and France weren't much
better. Whatever
I,
you want.
No, but I would say, if it was like 35-33 to France, and it was neck and neck.
Yeah,
I'd say that's the best case. And become
spring classic.
Like, oh, that was pretty. It was a great match. Yep. Great match.
Prendergast played well, but the defence still has some issues.
But even if it finished that same scoreline, but Ireland went 20-0 down, I think a lot of people would still be saying, like, what's going on with the start of that game? So I think a lot of people are ready to go here. Like, they're ready to go at this Ireland
side.
I think so. I think, well, I think there's a level of comfort that people have in doing that, for sure.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I kind of back them. Like, I kind of back Ireland to stand up here and not be made mugs of.
Stand up and fight. Yeah. We're so used to seeing them compete in big games against big teams. So when, like, the game against South Africa in November, when the scoreline isn't too bad, but the performance itself, we got dominated. It's such a shock. It's like, oof.
Yeah.
Kind of forgot that could happen.
Like the France game in Dublin last year was humbling, for sure.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
That was back then. That was real, like, geez, this is a step above. I remember the last time we said that about an Ireland side.
42-27 was the score then.
Yeah.
Did we have a slightly better team
out
there?
We scored towards the end of it to kind of make it look a little bit better.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. They ran away with it, yeah. And that was Panot, wasn't it? Running the length of the field.
Yeah, it was the ball. Ramos intercepted.
Went off injured, didn't he?
Yeah,
but
Luku had probably the best game of his life coming off the bench.
Yeah, he was excellent.
We were slightly ahead just after half time.
Yeah, so if you want to put it in simple terms, we're Ireland better than a year ago on paper than they are now, and look what France did to us. So that's the way you'd follow it up. But it's a different year. It's a different.
Prendergast is a year older. He's got a lot more game time under his belt. Some of those players are a bit more informed. Tommy O'Brien's in great form, so. You know, you can pick and choose, but I suppose then you look at maybe Jimmy Osborne hasn't played a game since November 8th against Japan. So,
what's your gut reaction this morning to the team?
To the team?
Yeah.
I like the look of it. I kind of need to see the French team first and then I'll make my mind up. I like the look of the back row, to be honest. I was kind of hoping Prendergast would get a start. But overall, I'm not too concerned. I'm happy for Clarkson as well, another person we should mention.
Yeah,
got to start over Beelum, which is interesting in itself. I think he is the next tie head, I think, after Furlong, and I think we nearly need to start going with him because Furlong is out injured so often and otherwise rested, so that's kind of an issue. We don't have any consistency there.
Let's see what the people are saying here. Celtic 4862, Sam needs to kick well from the tee if any hope.
Yeah, that's a big concern. I think something I've been thinking about is we need to work in a way to find a way to bring in another kicker. We have some great kickers around the country that aren't necessarily tens, like Nathan Doak being one who's in that camp. I think we need to look at our options as kickers because the two lads, Prendergast and Crowley, as good as they are, percentages this year aren't great. Harry Burns, slightly better, but he's obviously not the starting 10 yet, so that's something we need to look at. But yeah.
JL Simon Ebel says named at 11 Paris time this morning.
Right.
Celtics back a lot of opinions actually about this. And a team news should be named at the same time because now it gives France a chance to make a change.
Oh no, it's inclusion.
Yeah. What selection would make France change something here?
Oh my god.
Hand back.
Yeah, there's confidence. It's kind of quite confidence here, I suppose, would be the summation in the comments. Ireland are at their best when they're underdogs.
Yeah,
I don't know. I thought they were pretty good sometimes there where they were
the best team in the world.
Big overdog.
Yeah. K-Pick says, you guys still have hope, bemused by this. I think we'll finish fourth overall.
Yes.
The difference between finishing third and fourth is actually kind of catastrophic. It means that we've lost a home game against teams who we perceive to be, like, not very good. Italy might be better than we think. But
I'm very interested in the regression teams that have overperformed.
Yeah.
Same thing you're seeing with Thing. It's like, it's just Dubs. Teams that are, well, no, the Dubs are always dominant, so that's not the same.
Okay.
Teams that are overperformed and now they're coming, because I'm fascinated in even Colm's perspective there about the reaction. Because I'd say you're spot on in that the reaction will be very little different than if it was. It'll be treated the same way as if Ireland or New Zealand in the how can we do this? And you know what I mean? And I'm fascinated by how quickly the perspective changes after a little success. Or historically, in the base of things, I don't have the numbers, but I'm sure there's absolutely no shame or no historical ambiguity. Like, it would not be an abnormality for Ireland to go to France and lose convincingly. But when it's not what you're used to, all of a sudden everything changes, the perspective changes. Like, we can't be going there and getting embarrassed like that.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Competition reminder here for the Braeburn 100 euro voucher. WhatsApp 0879180180. What year did Ireland last win the Six Nations? Quirky 1980 says, what do you think it is? Ireland rugby team has never really been criticised by any panels.
What panels?
As in the media, I suppose. Maybe a bit of heat on them might put a chip on their shoulder to prove everyone wrong.
Well, I don't know about that. I think I do think that sometimes the they get away with stuff that they're it's hard to kind of explain the nuances of this. We've been having this as a long form conversation for a long time. The analysis that gets done is like, this is how it happened, this is why it happened. You know, bearing in mind Farrell is back, I hope that has a big impact. I hope that, like, having the coach who was considered to be the best coach in this whole area who isn't French, so they made him the head coach of the Lions, the fact that he's back for this Six Nations and wasn't there last year has a relatively significant impact in terms of outcome, just how at it they are. Like, what's the point of having a head coach if it's not going to have an impact?
Yeah, and I think, like, it allows our defence coach, Simon Easterby, to actually focus on the defence a bit more this time around as well. There's also that aspect of not, you know, him not getting to practice his bread and butter, and I think he's a quality defence coach, so...
Does Ivan McGann have a point here? At least we won't be peaking a year out from the World Cup this time.
Yeah.
In other words, expectations are slightly lower before a ball is kicked. Then the game starts and you're back into it. But at least the talk around the games.
I think there's definitely something in that.
Mm.
That, like, you're not revealing your hand before the biggest competition. It depends what way the IRF you're looking at it. But it has always been the case. We have our best years a year or two out from the World Cup. Or the year of.
I suppose that suggests there's enough in reserve or in the background that's going to come through that others don't know about
yet.
Well, your one hope would be that some of the injuries clear up and that gives you texture around horses for courses selections. I think Mack Hansen, I think Hugo Keenan, if they can come back and be the players that they were, that would be good. I think that there's room for a Dogbo and Izuchukwu to have an impact, and suddenly there is a bit of strength in depth there. But, like, you know, there's going to be loads of injuries. It's rugby.
Do you see this fascinating set about France after a Lions tour? They win the Six Nations afterwards, right? Matt Williams said this in his Guardian. 1998, 2002, 2006, 2010, 2022.